Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Emily Jordan Gargas, who is a marketing executive. She has led teams and brands, and she's worked for some heavyweights like Nike and Google, as well as high growth startups like Tubi and Willow. She has some great insights that she's going to share with us around leadership. Looking forward to today's conversation with Emily. I guess for our audience, can you give us just a little bit of your history, a little bit of your career story?
Yeah, sure. So I've spent about 15 to 20 years in marketing. I've gotten the chance, I think, to work with some of what I would consider best in their field at like Nike and Google for the first 10 years of my career. And then most recently, I kind of took a chance on myself and was an early marketing executive at two startups, Tubi, a streaming media app that was acquired by Fox. And then most recently, Willow, a fintech startup in the early motherhood space. Outside of just my day-to-day work, I really have always had a passion for building high-performing teams, focusing on the female consumer, thinking about marketing as a balance of kind of brand strategy and business. And then during my career, I've had a really a privilege of leading a few really cool initiatives, whether it was the Nike Women's Running Strategy. I helped open Google's first pop-up store. I was part of the executive team at Tubi that grew us from 5 million active users to 22 million active users. And then most recently, Willow really has had such a life-changing impact on new mothers' lives, which is, it can't be replaced.
Yeah, well, that's great. I will definitely jump in, maybe some additional questions around those experiences. But if you're able to spend back time and talk to a 22-year-old Emily, what advice would you give her knowing what you know now?
I would say, buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride. No. I would say, first and foremost, not all feedback is created equal. I think earlier in your career, especially myself, I was just a sponge for any and all feedback from any and all sources. And as I've grown in my career, what I have learned is that not all sources are reliable, thoughtful, and thinking on your behalf. And so balance those perspectives with those that are truly part of your internal personal board of directors. Understand your gut. I think if you're doing it right, you're not going to be for everyone, and that's okay. And so I think I, unfortunately, early on in my career, spent far too much time trying to make up for weaknesses rather than lean on my strengths, which is probably my second piece of feedback, which is not a new one. I think a lot of people have this one, but really lean into your strengths. One of my first jobs was at a company called Deloitte Consulting. And as part of that, they give you the Myers-Briggs assessment. And I remember going into that assessment and I was an ENFJ, which I had no idea what that meant at the time, but everyone around me was more thinking than feeling, more sensing than intuition, more introverted than extroverted. And so I felt that I had to be more like them rather than look at the incredible strengths that I came to the table with. As I learned a little bit more about MBTI, there are some incredible people that are ENFJs, Obama, Oprah, Nelson Mandela, Bill Gates. And I just think that I took for granted maybe that there's strength in seeing both the big picture and bringing hope and optimism to some challenging places.
Yeah, that's great. So as you think back to that first position where you were asked to lead a group, you maybe were brought in. Tell us a little bit about that first experience and what do you wish you would have known earlier?
Yeah. I had some middle manager opportunities when I was at Nike and Google, but probably my biggest place where I stretched the most was when I was at Tubi. So I was brought in as the first marketing executive at a company that was predominantly engineering driven, data driven, sales driven. And so for a lot of it was spent just helping others understand the value of my position and my competency. And so it was understanding the strength that you bring within your competency that might look very different than what the majority of those around you are. I would say that the second thing I learned there was how to take off your marketing or your functional hat and put your executive hat on. And sometimes how that shows up is that you have to make decisions and do things that might negatively impact your actual team and your function, but for the broader goal of the company and you as an executive, that's the right thing to do. So that took me a while to really get used to that. I was always trying to look out for my team and mama bear my team, but sometimes that means that you're not doing what's right for the broader business. And so I had to figure out that balance when I was at Tubi.
So to assess, make sure that you have the right people on the team. A lot of times, first time leaders will inherit a team that's already in place. Maybe they're part of that team and now are going to be leading people that were peers. What are some questions that a leader needs to be asking to make sure that they have the right people on the team?
Yeah. So when I think about the makeup of a team, I think about puzzle pieces. And so every person you bring on or that you inherit has to fill a specific puzzle piece for you, whether that's a competency puzzle piece or a culture puzzle piece or a diversity of thought puzzle piece. And so they should all fit and nest together. There shouldn't be overlapping pieces. There shouldn't be, pieces that are so far apart on the puzzle that they don't fit next to each other. And so that's, I think, the big question is like, what puzzle piece is this person filling competency-wise, culture-wise, diversity of thought-wise? And that's the first one. And then I would say when I think about, building a team, I focus a lot on just the hiring process and the performance management process. Yep. I know those are not like sexy things, but I find them incredibly interesting. From a hiring process, it is a process. And you should take it very seriously, think about it very rigorously and very intentionally. I think about everything from what is this person going to do? How am I communicating it to the rest of the team? What people am I bringing into a panel? How am I even letting that panel share their feedback? So I always start with the most junior person and work my way up to the most senior person. And so I take a lot of intention with it, with my hiring processes. And then on the performance management side, I believe in both a balance of structured process and unstructured process. And I think me as a manager, part of my job is to make sure you're successful in your role. But if I think back long-term, I really want this person to be successful long-term, even outside of the company that I'm working with at the moment. So it's a balance of kind of how are you performing in the role in this particular cycle? How are you, what are your long-term goals and how are we tracking progress-wise to meeting those? And then kind of what's your goal long-term outside of even this position, just to make sure that we're making inroads to get you there.
So as you are leading a team, and I think a lot of time is spent in meetings, either one-on-ones or in a larger group setting, what are some mistakes that you see leaders making in leading those meetings?
I think there's a couple things. I think first is balancing the formal and efficiency part of meetings with just the informal getting to know you. So that could just mean getting to know someone as a whole human first, rather than jumping straight into, the affairs of the day. That's number one. I would say two, balancing whether something needs to be actually a meeting. Like everyone's had that moment where they're sitting in a meeting, they're like, this could have been an email. And I think that's the question I try to ask myself before every single meeting. And then third, I think getting feedback on regular meetings, like what's working, what's not, what would actually be helpful. I think especially at larger companies, you find yourself in these MBRs, QBRs, and you're like, why are we still doing this? Like we've evolved past this and we haven't taken a fresh, curious look back at whether this is actually needed. And I think fourth is always prioritize one-on-ones. I think we underestimate how important one-on-one time is rather than time in a group.
So you've been in some very large organizations and then you've been in some startups in the last few years. Talk about just that change in mindset from a large organization to a more entrepreneurial startup. Talk about that and what you've learned.
Yeah. I think it comes down oftentimes to accountability. And when you're at larger organizations, the skill set that you're building is how to influence, how to think you know, beyond how to think bigger, like you have much larger resources, but you might be focused on a very narrow sliver of the organization, where at smaller organizations, you might have fewer resources, but your responsibility and accountability are much closer together. So you're not just responsible for a function, you're actually accountable for the results. Where at larger organizations, accountability can be spread much broader. And I've really enjoyed having that accountability. It makes it very clear when things are working and when they're not. And you just get so much more refreshing learnings. At some of the larger organizations, it was funny. I think we spent more time marketing sometimes internally than we did actually marketing to our end consumer.
So what are some things that you took forward as far as kind of best practices that you brought forward as far as into kind of more the entrepreneurial?
Yeah, it's funny. I spent more time at Google than I did at Nike, but Nike, I just took so much from that experience. First, they had this unique understanding of their consumer and everything was consumer-centric. I think a lot of organizations believe they're consumer-centric, but Nike really lived it. First and foremost, you had this muse that you, the first thing that a category built each year was refreshing their muse consumer. And that person was a real person with a name and a background and interests and purchase data and just a full rounded human that you built things for. And that took priority over the product roadmap, the revenue. It was a really interesting piece. That's definitely one thing I've taken away from me from those experiences. At Google, what I really learned was collaboration. It's a large organization. The collaboration between product, engineering, marketing, design, and sales was so crucial that you kind of like lived and breathed by how well you could collaborate and learn and understand what was going on in those situations. And then probably the last thing I learned was just true big thinking. I remember working at Google and the Amazon Echo had just been announced at CES, and that it was in January. And by June, we had redone the product roadmap and launched a competitor product. And I don't even think it was in the product pipeline. I think it was maybe like a twinkle in the head of engineering's eyes. And in 6 months, we were able to turn something around, a hardware product, which usually has roadmaps of like 18 to 24 months. And we were really able to turn something around pretty quickly. So just like speed to market, think big, move fast. And, you know, you'd be amazed with what some of that can teach you longer term.
Okay. Great. Yeah. And some of the personalities are large at those companies. What every leader is a learner, and typically people enjoy learning something new. And are there any books that you would recommend to other leaders that, I don't know if Shoe Dogs is on your list, but
yeah, I think I've read like every Nike and Google book possible. And I also lived it. Yeah, I have so many. First and foremost, every time I would get recommended a business book, I was like, how am I going to finish this? I don't have any time to read. So what I do is I download these books on Audible, and then I take them with me on commutes, drives, walks, hikes, all of those types of things. That's my number one recommendation. But when it comes to actual books, I have a few classics. I love Five Dysfunctions of a Team. I've been on some dysfunctional teams and some very functional teams, and that just helps you get to the root of where you are in those five dysfunctions, because you're always within one, even in the most functional teams. Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. It's a really short read, but if you're not familiar with him, he just has some interesting perspectives having lived through the Holocaust. And then Stephen Covey's Five Habits of Highly Effective People. You know, even as a business person, but even in my personal life, my family, we sit down and do kind of family goals and family values every couple of years just to really make sure we're in the right spot mindset wise. I also recommend a number of books for female leaders. We often need a little bit of an added push that is less of the quote unquote lean in faction and more of the, you know, yes, you can do this. Like, it will be hard, but here are some modeled experiences that you can work off of. I love Sally Krawcheck's book, Own It. Kara Golden's book, Undaunted. I just finished Deborah Liu's book, Take Back Your Power, which was fantastic. And then this was a little bit further back, but Shelley Archambault, her book called Unapologetically Ambitious. I think I used to listen to them before work, and they put me in a really good mindset to kind of just go be a formidable leader in the space.
Yeah, great. Yeah, both Kara Golden and Shelley have been guests on our podcast. And definitely some good information. Favorite quotes that you like to refer to?
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think about quotes, but I think about mantras.
Okay.
And so I have a couple mantras that I keep on, you know, post-it notes in our house somewhere, to my husband's chagrin. The first one is, this too shall pass. So regardless of good or bad, everything is temporary. I felt that very much as a new parent. But it just means that you should enjoy the good and know that the bad isn't going to be forever. So being able to see the forest through the trees in those particular moments. Second, lift as you rise. I heard this from a talk with Issa Rae, the creator of Insecure. Great show. And I loved it. My job as a leader is to reach back and lift the careers of those behind me and beside me. And so, you know, getting to where you are, you're never going to be able to do it alone. And so you need the lift as you rise so that you're opening the doors for others that were open for you. And then last, I would say, second to last, elevating the thinking of others. You know, you don't, I take a very coaching approach to leading teams and feel that true leaders really help elevate the thinking of those around them. They're not the loudest, they're not the most outspoken, they're not even the smartest, but they do ask the right questions and they help push the thinking of the organization and those around them. And I think that's kind of been my mantra is, you don't have to have all the information, you don't have to be the smartest in the room, but you do need to elevate the thinking. And last one is probably not a popular one right now, just because it's a meta Facebook value, but move fast and break things. I tend to err more on the speed over perfection. But I think this helps support more of that test and learn mentality, meeting failure with curiosity, and not being afraid to fail. Like I think especially women, female leaders grow up in a very perfectionist mindset. And I think you have to move fast. You have to have some things broken. You can't operate off of perfectionism. You have to be more in that 80-20. And so I just love that constant reminder of like move fast, break things.
Yeah. Great. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Yeah. Gosh, good question. I swear I do things outside of work. But I am an outdoor junkie. 90% of the reason that we still live in the Bay Area, certainly it's not for the housing costs, is that we can be outside for 365 days of the year. So in the winter time, I'm usually skiing. If it's, I think I hike probably like once or twice a week, every week. And the summer, we're usually in some sort of body of water. My family lives in Michigan. My husband's family lives in Washington. And so we're always near some kind of lake. I'm also a crazy cinephile. So I think I can rival just about anyone on movie trivia. And we used to go to a weeknight movie trivia before we had kids, and we would just crush, and I miss those days. And then last, my husband makes a mean margarita. We've dubbed them gargaritas because they're so good. And since the pandemic, we've consistently done a Friday happy hour every Friday at our house for 3 straight years. And it is like quite the scene at this point.
Well, I have to ask this. So your top 3 movies.
Ooh, okay.
That's probably going to be tough.
It is going to be tough. Maybe I can talk about like what I've just recently watched, because that's always maybe a little bit more exciting. I have been watching Physical, which is on Apple Plus. It's with Rose Byrne. And she plays like a 1980s Jane Fonda-esque, but she just has, it's a really interesting show just around like, I don't know, it's a little dark and twisty, which I always really like. And then we love Hard Knocks, which is not a new show, but the football show, it's an incredible documentary where they follow a football team each season, each preseason. And it's so dramatic, but I wouldn't consider myself like an incredible football fan, but they make it so entertaining. Let me see what's a last one. I don't know. Those are probably the big ones. And then I am rewatching Insecure, which just made me think of that quote from Issa Rae. Just really love the storytelling there. And the she created like two very relatable female characters that I definitely very seen after that show.
All right. Any parting advice that you would give to a new leader?
Yeah, I feel like most of my parting advice is like parables or anecdotes from growing up in the Midwest. I grew up in a small town in Indiana, so most of these anecdotes are from like my grandmother or my mom.
Sure.
And living out in the Bay Area, there aren't many of us Midwesterners. But one thing my family always used to say, but was get curious before you're furious. Mm. And so that's one piece of parting advice is it's very easy to kind of live in our monkey mind and get really mad about something, but get curious about it first. Like, why are you getting mad? What is it behind that? Ask someone why they're saying those things just to understand their perspective a little bit more.
Good.
And then this is from my mom, but every time you point a finger, there are four fingers pointing right back at you. So own it, be accountable.
Sure.
And then the last one was you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Listen more than you speak. And then I think from like not living in the Midwest is just take risks. Act versus acted upon. I think you'd be surprised. You might surprise yourself.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed this conversation. I know it's going to be helpful for those listening and wish you continued success in all that, that you'll do in the future. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Mark. This was such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.